What the heck is going on, everybody? And again, welcome back to the Metal Massacre Podcast with me, one of your hosts, Dustin Peters.
And me.
And you.
I'm also here. Don't forget me.
I
feel like you were about to forget me.
That's fair. Actually, I'm probably... I almost went off on a... And then it's just me. Fuck you. No, thank you to everybody who checked out our first trailer episode last week. It was only like 20 minutes, just trying to get to know us. We're going to expand on that a little bit going on, because honestly, we got to get this episode up and done, because we're on the road.
Like, yeah. We're about to play another show. Played one last night in Kansas City with Beast Eagle, and we're playing with them again tonight as of recording in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yes, absolutely. We've been going around with those guys, good friends. Austin just done tattoos on... You have any
No,
Austin?
I used to work with him at a shop, but he has never done a tattoo on me. He's the guitarist.
You're missing out.
Of Beast Eagle. Very, really cool guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really nice, and they're super cool for letting us play with them. So I'm super stoked to go in, but we gotta get this thing on the road, because we gotta hit the road here pretty soon. Get out there for load in. So
hell yeah. No, man, like, it's been a lot of fun. Honestly, this year's been starting off strong. I think for pretty much, we try and stay somewhat local is what we're gonna try and do, like we mentioned in the first episode, but also, you know, we'll encompass all over the place. But being as that, again, we're based here in Omaha, and Herdat, again, shout out to Herdat for having us on the show, is based in Omaha as well, for at least this. We really wanted to kind of tap into that local market, because I know a lot of you are here in Omaha. So no matter where you
There's
are,
a lot of metalheads in Omaha. People don't realize that.
Yeah. Thank you for being here wherever the hell you are. But, bro, we've actually, hearing to suck ourselves off for a second here.
Jesus.
We've had a lot of cool fucking shows over the past year. It's hard to nail one down, but, what's your favorite show we've played this past year, man?
Okay, before we go on, we should also tell the people the name of our band. If you didn't catch the trailer episode, our band is called Molten. It's been around since 2016. I'm a newer addition as the vocalist. Mm-hmm. And we've got a new EP coming out this year called Oblivious. So stay tuned for that on Spotify. My favorite show we played in the last year... Oh, God.
Right. So there's a few of them, and some of them were great for
probably
different
Exodus.
Reasons. Yeah. I mean, some of them were great for different reasons, but it's hard not to say.
Exodus was the best show.
Playing 1,000 people.
It was a crazy fun crowd, too. Like, everyone was moving, having a good time. Everyone was really receptive to us, and I think that's kind of what you're looking for when you're playing live music, is you want a crowd that's going to play... catch with you with the energy, mm-hmm. you know, and toss it back and forth. And immediately when we stepped on the stage, and I just like lifted my hands, and everyone went, yeah, I was like, okay, this is gonna be fun.
Yeah,
because these guys are awesome.
They don't even know who we are. Yeah. A lot of them,
we're the first band.
Like, came out and just raised your hands up and had 1,000 people being like, ah!
Yeah,
like, all right, you know, these guys are primed and they're ready to have a great show.
Yeah,
and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, from a tiny dive bar to a place like the Slowdown locally here in Omaha, that's a huge venue. If people are excited, that it's so stupid to say, because yeah, no shit, dude, but like, you can really get a read of the room. I've played to 20 people,
yeah,
but I've played to 20 people that were like there because they had to be,
yeah,
and were just hanging out at their local dive and just happened to see a show because they were already there drinking before the cover charge started. But I've also played to 20 people that were there to die, you know what I mean? Like, they're there because they were earnestly and honestly wanting to put energy back into that room. And I think a lot of that really comes, I don't want to say comes down to, but like, there are certain venues, and I think that this is probably earnest to everyone, no matter where you are in the world, period, is like, there are certain venues that just have an energy to it.
Yeah.
That when people show up, like, if you're not throwing down and you're not giving your all as an audience member or being engaged, it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Whereas the other places, obviously, you know, you play and they're like, oh, yeah.
Well, and it's also the type of show that's being played. Like, there, if it was a lighter rock band, like, you're not going to get that kind of energy that you would at a heavy metal show.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that just goes hand in hand with metal, too, in these venues, is that people are like, I'm here to destroy and like have a good time, and like, obviously to the layman, people are like, damn, this sounds really intense. Well, there's just a code of conduct in the pit. There's people that always look out for each other, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But everyone's got that kind of swagger to them and that attitude, and everyone's just, it's so much fun.
Well, speaking on Exodus as well, I mean, because I, you know, like, normally, not to be big time, but like, you know, if you're playing a bigger show like that, most of the time we play our set, then you stay kind of the fuck out of the way,
and yeah,
then, you know, you stay inside stage and watch a lot of those those guys. If it's a local, like, smaller gig, you'll, you know, you play your show, but then you go stand in the audience with the rest of them just to kind of support the band that's on stage. But when you're playing with bigger names like that, that's honestly one of the few times where I was like, oh, I'm going out in the pit with the rest of these people. I don't care for them. Because there were a few people who were like, whoa, you're the dude that was on stage. Like, get out here. And I was like, yeah, no, get out of my way. Yeah. But like,
bumping into people.
But
being
like,
a big jerk.
Exodus was one of those shows where I knew, I was like, I'm going to take a couple pictures because this is pretty cool. But I'm going to go in the pit. And I was a fanboy. Just, there was actually one of those famous, it was more viral things I was going around of James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett from Metallica while Judas Priest was playing. And they're just standing in the car with everybody else air guitar in, having a good fucking time. And it's like the caption says something like, you never grow too old to like your favorite bands.
Yeah, dude. And for sure.
That was that night for me as well, where I was like, even though I was supposed to be like, you know, professional, but I was like, no, man, I'm a fanboy just like the rest of you. I gotta do this. I don't care. I'm going out and pitting with everybody else. And right. I'm like, God damn, I was sore because I ain't that young either. But like, fuck, it was a good time. Me personally, just because I'm a party animal myself, I mean, I ain't gonna sugarcoat it. I love partying, I like drinking, I like hanging out with my friends and stuff, but that's why Green Jello was my favorite show last year.
Yeah, Green Jello was a good show. We played two shows with them, one at the Waiting Room, one in St. Joe, and they were both wild.
Yeah, we went on like a just like a little weekend fling with them. I actually followed him to Des Moines the next night too.
Oh,
but
nice.
I didn't do much, but I did a little sound checking for him because I knew at that point I understood what the
vibe was
what it was supposed to be. So if you guys aren't familiar, which if you're listening to the show,
like
you don't
circus,
know Green
man.
Jello, dude.
It's
like,
not a band. It's a circus.
It's a it's their circus puppet show is what they call it. And famously, I'm sure a lot of you, if you're within the metal community, you know who Green Jello is. But if you don't, they were really famous for that Three Little Pigs song they did. Just look it up; you'll find it immediately.
Yeah,
and they are also infamous, and I do want to say infamous, and I don't know if it's negative, but it's a good thing in this case, where Bill Manspeaker, who's the only one that's like a staple of that band, he's actually the people
he's
that are
the patriarch
in,
of it.
Yeah, the people that are in the band called Thinky Flesh, which is Slim and Jella, like there are two. They have their own band, but they've been getting dragged along. And what I think the coolest, really, besides the party and the absolute monstrosity that was that show, the coolest thing to me was that A, people at the Waiting Room, because it is also a larger establishment, was like, where is the touring band? Like, we have like 30 minutes to doors and they haven't even been here.
They haven't even showed up.
They're like, and I went up to them and I was like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but they're not going to sound check.
Yeah.
They're not going to have a set list.
Right.
No one knows what they're doing, including them.
They're just
and
here.
Like, they're going to show up. And during that show, I remember he looked at me and also the rest of Bill Manspeaker. He looked at the rest of us. And he found me because I was hanging backstage. He's like, you played in the first band. Take these fucking puppet heads and go find people that are willing to come up on stage. I was like, do what now? And he's like, go and carry these puppet heads out there and see who's excited about wearing one and then drag their ass up here. And I was like, okay. And I just went out there and just started like parading around with like a cow head, a puppet head, a fucking a pig head, the thing for the three little pigs, Big Bad. Well, like, I've never been to a show like that, I guess is my point, without going on for
it's very bohemian, man. It's very
you don't know what you're getting.
There is no plan.
No. And I very graciously, they were honestly all a lot of fun. They were all really nice. And I think even Slim Jelly, the girl that plays for Thinky Flesh, is like the girl that does the singing for them. She posted a meme like not too long ago that was like that, like those. It's a meme where everyone's like in a party and there's like one guy off the side's like, they don't know that I'm important or whatever. But like literally the caption was like, they don't know I'm the 1,043rd member on Green Jello. Like, that's true though. I mean, like,
I just saw they came out with a new track too.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And they had a didgeridoo player. Couldn't even hear him. Didn't fucking matter.
It's like if one of the Beatles was still alive and they really were still into like their weird trippy phase.
Yeah.
That's Green Jello. It just turned into this conglomerate of artists and musicians that just do crazy things.
I guess
I was entertaining. I'll say that. It was really entertaining and I enjoyed it, but God, I did not expect it.
No, I've never ran into the dichotomy of something so professionally unprofessional. Like, I've never ran into something that was just, I've played with bands, like I said,
the second show in St. Joe was crazy because it was this little skate punk venue called the Skate Bar.
We went from a 500 person venue sold out to a place that's capacity was 70.
Yeah.
And they
not
had
even.
People outside.
Yeah.
Just bought tickets to stand outside and look through the window while we were running around. And like I said,
I had a really good time at that show though, because there was a brewery like two spaces down in the little strip mall. And it was like, I don't know. They had this chill room in the basement where it was like you walk through a bank vault
speakeasy.
To get to it. Like, yeah, it was this weird speakeasy. And I just bought one of those growlers and sat there all day.
I still have it. It's called like the
A lot of people don't realize this. When you go to shows 9 times out of 10 and you're out of town, you got to be there like super early. And you're like, God, I hope there's like food next to the venue because I can't remove my car.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to like walk somewhere and get food. And like 9 times out of 10, it's like a McDonald's or something. But every once in a while, there's a really cool spot. Like right next to a venue and you're like, well, thank God.
And that's what I'll give a shout out to Omaha for in specific, is every one of the major areas, and I guess I can only speak to like, again, because I play metal and that's
like
what
Benson.
I know. Benson, yeah. Downtown, they all have great amenities for the people playing and for the audience.
Yeah, there's awesome stuff.
There's a smoke shop. There's a place to get some extra beers beforehand. There's
a diner.
Great restaurants.
Shout out JoJo's Diner in Benson. Your last show you played with your other band, Before We Die.
Yep.
Me and my wife got food there. It was across the street from the Reverb Lounge. JoJo's Diner, brand new, really good food, nice people. Go check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, speaking on that, I guess, yeah, I have another band, but it is not but. I'm having just as much fun. We got some big stuff planned for us. It's called Before We Die. It's a little bit more, you know, like closer to like Chevelle, Breaking Benjamin, Shine Down, that kind of stuff. It's a little, it's more radio friendly, but at the same time, it's
something usually, you might hear on the Underworld 1 soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I think of that band.
Yeah.
Like it's the early 2000s, like Evanescence didn't quite do that weird ass song yet.
Yeah.
Like it's like that, like right before Ben Affleck was Daredevil.
Oh.
Like isn't that kind of era?
Taking me back, bro.
That's what it makes me feel like, early Linkin Park era, and I like it. Because there's not enough stuff like that. But that's a story for a whole nother day. But no, I really like the scene in Omaha, and I think it's starting to get better as far as how it interacts with local artists.
True. Yeah, we're starting to get a lot of pop around here, and there's so many talented bands around the space. And I know that sounds like I'm just trying to do the formalities, but no, it's true. There's no shortage of bands if we want to book that I can trust that if I put them on a show, they're going to move tickets and they're going to have a great fucking time.
Yeah.
So like, there is no shortage of heavy music in Omaha right now. And it's awesome to see, because we had it back when we felt like we were teenagers. And I don't know if it ever had like a real lull, because it was huge, especially when we had places like Lookout. And I know this is all local and people have no idea what we're talking about.
Some of you are like, what are you talking about?
In every city, in every phase, every town, there's waves and there's bands that come and go. But right now, I think we're in one of the strongest points we can. So I'm looking forward to see what Omaha Metal does. But
yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Let's get into some of the actual shit.
We got some news updates?
Well,
sort of. Going on?
I just have some opinion
pieces. You're reaching
for
your phone. It's making me nervous.
Nah, I got some opinion pieces and I wanted to read one of these things. It'll kind of take us into our broader conversation, because the article is the article. But
okay.
This is coming from Joel Barrios at metalinjection.net. Headlines: Duff McKagan and Jerry Cantrell are thinking about doing a joint record at some point. Now, normally this wouldn't be news, but let me get into this here. And again, this is from Joel Barrios. Says, in a recent episode of the Life in the Stocks podcast, Guns N' Roses bassist Duff McKagan hinted at the possibility of recording a full-fledged album with Alice in Chains guitarist Jerry Cantrell. McKagan revealed that he's currently lending his bass talents to 5 tracks on Cantrell's upcoming solo endeavor, before saying the two have actually been considering teaming up for a more complete album. Quote, we've been thinking about doing a joint record at some point. We made a video for that song, Just Don't Know, which was the single off of Duff's 23 solo album, Lighthouse. But we're just hanging out with our acoustic guitars. We wrote like 4 songs in 2 or 3 hours and actually put bones behind them, end quote. But reflecting on the experience, McKagan expressed his admiration for Cantrell's dedication to artistry. Quote, I really appreciate guys like Jerry. It's really nice for me to work with guys who are basically the same age and been through the exact same shit. I can see him write songs and fight his guitar for whatever lead he's trying to get. It's so great to watch, because he tortures himself to get to this place, goddammit, end quote. But The article goes on, and that's really the bulk of what it is. But what I wanted to bring up out of that is, A, I think that's fucking cool. If you tell me that those two guys that are like staples of two of the best bands, I mean, like, I was never a huge Guns N' Roses guy growing up, but it's inarguable how talented they are and
sure.
what they've done for culture and what they've done worldwide. But Alice in Chains is like a lot of like your musician's favorite musicians guy.
I roadied one of their shows.
Really?
Yes. That was, Rockfest, River Riot, one of the two.
They came here, yeah, not too long ago, with the new singer and all that.
It was when I was working for that company, doing like roadie and stagehand work and stuff. But it was the amphitheater out in Iowa,
just across there,
West Fair. I forget, I think it was Breaking Benjamin, them... Bush,
yeah,
and like a bunch of other bands that I was like, how did we get all these bands? Like,
right.
I would get one of them headlining, but all of them, like, it was a really good show. And that was like one of those, you're working 11 hours that day,
no
you're
shit.
In the heat and the dirt and the rocks and the sand, and you're moving shit around. I loved being a stagehand and kind of working as a roadie.
What was your favorite show to roadie? Do you have one that sticks out in your head? Because you went all over the fucking place. You did the Chili Peppers, like, in Denver.
I have a least favorite, but I gotta think about my favorite, because it's such backbreaking work. And like, the thing is, when you get talked down to by somebody's like stage or tour manager, it's like it makes the whole day suck.
Been so there,
like,
done that kind of thing too. Yeah, there's a few bands we played with that had tour managers that were up their own ass. And to be fair, it's because you kind of have to be hard nosed when you're dealing with a different city every night and different people, different bookers.
I think it's probably a tie. Between Shinedown with Jelly Roll.
Oh, yeah.
Because Jelly Roll gave me a huge hug.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he's a really nice
and
guy.
He's one of the biggest artists in the world right now.
He's blowing up, yeah. Shinedown was really cool. Working that show was just really fun. And then...
I've heard good stuff about those guys. I mean, like, I'm not in the know as much, but I've heard good stuff about those dudes, to be honest, I think.
Motley Crue, when they went on tour with Def Leppard and Joan Jett.
Oh, yeah.
It was in Nashville, and we drove, like, 12 hours to get there, but they put us up in this super nice hotel.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, we worked like every facet of that show. We were setting up all the chairs. We were running power. We were doing sound. We were doing backline. Mm-hmm. Everything had one of our guys in that group. Because typically how it would go in these stadium shows is they would go, okay, I need 20 people in a group. I need guys for lights. I need guys for power. I need guys for sound. I need guys for like picking up chairs.
Production.
I need guys for backline. I need guys to just push stuff to the trucks. I need guys between them.
They take semis with them.
Yeah. They like people don't get these stadium shows. It's not uncommon for them to have 50 semi trucks.
Yeah, like
you're loading and unloading all of them.
Yeah.
So
pyro. I mean, fucking
everything from
playing on a roller coaster.
The Motley Crue one. I think they had something close to 111 semi trucks.
That's ridiculous.
And it was everything from like, hey, we need these fake plants in our green room. To like in chairs and just stupid shit they wanted in their green room. They're like, we take it everywhere with us. To like, this is all of the stage equipment for like, hey, the dancer girls that we have, there's elevators on the stage that they get up and on, and it goes up and down, and it looks like Death Clock. Like, it's surrounded in spikes and like crazy metal arcs and stuff. Right. Tommy Lee's drum riser, just like, that was one of the coolest shows I think we did. And then when we did them in Colorado, I got to talk to his new wife for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't remember her name, but she was super nice and like talked to me like a real person.
Yeah. I was like, her, they had Tommy and her again. I feel bad not knowing her name. I could Google it, but
you feel like an a-hole for not remembering, but like I don't remember. It's just one of those
they
things.
Had them on Your Mom's House podcast with Tom Segura, and they came through just to kind of talk about stuff
that's
for
cool.
a while, and she was honestly really good on the microphone.
Yeah, well spoken,
but also like I'm not dealing with his shit, you know what I mean? Like it's I know who this... It's fucking Tommy Lee. Come on.
You probably have to have infinite patience to be Tommy Lee.
Right. I mean, he's like...
That guy's a wild card.
He's a wild card.
Yeah.
He's honking boat horns with his dick. Like, the guy's...
Such a weirdo. Like, but,
we all... Yeah. If you're a certain age, you all remember his Pamela Anderson time.
That was probably one of my favorite gigs to work. just a lot of that. I do want to have an episode where maybe we get more into that job.
That would be honestly really cool. Some of the behind the scenes shit of like, what's it like to play big shows? What's it like to set up big shows? Because I've done a fair amount of it, but not to that level because you've made it your job.
The smallest ones I did were like Westford Amphitheater. Which so like still, the biggest ones I did were like the stadium that the Broncos play in.
Whatever that it used to be.
Mile High, but now it's something else.
Invesco Field.
Yeah, something it's something like else. But we worked so many of those kind of shifts, and it would be like, hey, this crew screwed up. We need you to come in and take their place. We fired them.
Yeah.
Sorry, you worked 11 hours yesterday and you got 6 hours of sleep, but we're waking you up and now you're going to work another 11, 10 hours 12. Or something. It's like, cool. Do we get lunch? Maybe. Okay. Maybe. Awesome.
Yeah. Like, it'd be fun to like, hey man, that's,
that would be a fun thing to get into.
Suffer for your art kind of shit. That's, I will be say, a great episode.
Yeah. I think it'd be fascinating to get into the ups and downs of that industry and exactly my concerns and maybe even get into why I left. And like why I don't want to do it. Like, if there would be a couple things that changed, I would totally go back and do it. But it's just one of those industries where, because of how it's shaped and because of how it's organized, there's not enough if you want to thrive in a certain industry.
Shit, maybe next episode before we get into like some of our interviews or topics, that'd be a great spot to start.
I think it would. Yeah. But I think, sorry to kind of sidetrack that, but I think that's going to be one of those things where I'm just super curious as to what kind of metal they're going to make.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you see guys like, the guitarist from Motley Crue, Mick Mars, go off and do something, and you're like, is it just going to be Motley Crue?
Right. Well, like, you know, and back in the day, I mean, shit, every single member of Kiss had a solo album that were all a bit weird and a bit different. And, like, granted, those guys are the grandfathers of metal in a way, too. But, you know, it's looking up to it nowadays. Is Kiss metal? No. But, like, yes, they certainly are. Sure. Everything they do, they're spitting blood. They're doing the crazy stuff. Right. It's just, you know, people didn't think that Ozzy was that metal, but he's the goddamn grandfather of metal. Like, it, if you look at it, if you told it to an 18-year-old kid nowadays, be like, yeah, Ozzy is, who gives a shit? Be like, right. No, here's why you should give a shit.
Yeah, there's reasons, bud.
But
listen up.
I guess, you know, like those two pairing up, I mean, it kind of wanted me to ask you, as long
as I'm glad you brought up Ozzy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, you know, what is some of your favorite, like, super groups in rock or heavy metal, that kind of stuff, or even just collaborations like that?
My favorite that I have listened to, it's probably going to be on my Spotify rap for, like, the next 10 years, is Hellraiser with Motorhead and Ozzy.
Oh, yeah.
Lemmy and Ozzy together. Yeah. I think those dudes, and I'm going to get weird here in meta for a second. I look at those dudes and I see me and you. Because you're more of the Lemmy guy. You're the roadhouse, hitting the road, partying hard.
Yeah.
Like still getting by. Kind of like
off Marlboros and Jack.
Yeah, that guy. And, I'm like the more mystic, creepy, like weird Ozzy of the two. So I've always kind of thought of us in that way. But like that song, I think is perfect in the fact that like they utilize Ozzy's highs and Lemmy's lows,
gravelly,
and like, it's such a good like dynamic between the two that it's one of my favorite like team ups, I guess you could call it.
Yeah,
not really a super group because it's just Ozzy joining Motorhead, but I think adding Ozzy's vocals in to support Lemmy was really cool, and to do like his own verse. And then they even came out with a really cool animated music video, which I love just putting on in the background when people come over to my house. But that's probably my favorite team up,
a collaboration. I'm trying to think of other just like quick, like, hey, this featuring this kind of thing. That's honestly one of the better ones. Because I really enjoy that song. And the music video, like you're saying, was pretty fucking cool too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, looking back through the years, I mean, you have like Audio Slave, you know, your Rage Against the Machine and Chris Cornell. And but honestly, one of my favorites ones that I don't think is like overlooked, but I have one that it's like a guilty pleasure and one that I feel like deserves a little bit more. I'll give you the one that deserves a little bit is Down that originally had Phil and Selma from Pantera, along with the guys. God, who else was it? I should have this in front of me. Oh, here it is. Pantera, Corrosion of Conformity, Crowbar, and I Hate God. Pepper Keenan, Kirk Winston, Jimmy Bauer, and obviously Phil Anselmo. But I'm reading this little synopsis. It's like, it's masters of the Southern fried riffage and swinging grooves when they all got together for their 1995 debut, NOLA, NOLA, for New Orleans, Louisiana. But Down was always one of my favorite. They have like a couple really good songs that like stick with me even now. Like they're definitely in like my Spotify Wrapped every year. Like I still listen to a couple Down songs. One of them that was more of a guilty pleasure for me, only because it was goof ass, was like was Hell Yeah. The guys, the singer,
really?
The singer from Mudvayne,
yeah, and the drummer from Pantera,
and but like not alcohol and ass, but like yeah. I mean, like they're, that's just like guilty pleasure because it's a little bit cheesy every now and again, and but like, dude, the singer from Mudvayne's voice is also again such an iconic power voice in metal. There's only like a really like few of them, because granted, obviously, you know, like. Well, yeah, Soundgarden, Chris Cornell, like, was a powerhouse of loud, heavy rock. Were they, like, really, really metal? Yeah, I would say so. I mean, like, they were right in that cusp of that area. It was a little bit more radio rock, sure, but I think there's a few guys, like, obviously, your Robert Plant, you know, your Chester Bennington, Chris Cornell, but there's so many people that have, like, iconic voices in rock that I don't think Mudvayne's overlooked, but I do think that when you just go back, it's one of those things where like you can talk as much shit about you want to, and you're a little bit more opinionated when you're younger as yeah. well. Like, oh, I don't fuck with that. I don't listen to that. That guy's stupid. But like, I mean, fuck. We were listening on the way down to Kansas City. We were listening to Nickelback playing Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, and you wouldn't have caught me fucking dead.
Yeah,
you
wouldn't as have a caught kid, me dead yeah.
anywhere near that, because it was just fun to make fun of Nickelback. But like, also,
I think as you get older, you're just kind of like, what feels good?
And also, you know? Can you not like? They're selling out arenas. There's somebody likes them. They're doing it right.
There's not a lot of metal collabs I really like, to be honest.
I kind of figured that, honestly.
It's like there's a very few that I'm really like, oh, this matters. Like the ones I think off the top of my head are like the death metal ones, where it's like, oh, one of the screamers is a different guy from a different band. Mm-hmm. But you kind of wouldn't even realize it if no one told you. You know what I mean? It's like that. Like, metal is such a hard genre to collaborate because each band has its own style. You end up just covering them instead of collaborating with them. Like, how many metal covers do you know of? You know,
oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, Motorhead covered Enter Sandman. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many bands that will just rather cover a song than collaborate with the artist, because I think they don't want to sacrifice their artistic integrity to change their sound that much. Mm-hmm. And each band they're thinking of is like, well, we'd have to change a lot of who we are to collaborate with them.
To find that sound, because you do, in the part of the supergroup being fun is that each one of them has their, like, there's a reason that they're in it, because they're an iconic figure that has a specialty style. And then having those try and always meld rarely works. But it's when you find these super groups, that's what makes them super, is the fact that they took someone that was either willing to change or bend, if you will, along with what is obviously going to be the integral sound of what it's supposed to be. And one of the best ones, like the last one I wanted to bring up, which is exactly what I was thinking, is them Crooked Vultures.
Yeah.
That Dave Grohl, along with Queens of the Stone Age. Like, it was a blend between those two, that obviously I think it was mainly Josh and Dave that like started that thing together, and then hired a couple folks as opposed to making just like a super group. But like, them Crooked Vultures have like a bunch of songs. Like, Queens of the Stone Age is one of my favorite bands, period. I think overall, if I really had to look throughout the years and like how much they're the number one on my Spotify Wrapped every year, and I just every time I'm like, really?
Yeah,
I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I do really listen to them all the time. I love all their shit. Like, they're weird, and they're usually not something I would like even put myself like. It's weird looking back at it and be like, yeah, I guess they are kind of my favorite band. That's, huh, you didn't really think about that kind of thing. But I mean, yeah, there's, I'm trying to think of any other ones too, but yeah, that kind of stuff though, where, well, first of all, like I said, Queens of the Stone Age being one of my favorite bands ever, then you grab someone like Dave Grohl, who's, that's exactly what I was talking about, is that's where I was going. It's like, he's still just drumming, and obviously there's people that can make drumming sound very unique.
You know, yeah.
Your System of a Down's, your Rush, your whatever, but
yeah.
Like, having him be Dave fucking Grohl, but then be like, oh, I'm just gonna go back and play drums again.
Yeah.
Fucking just sit behind the kit and just play drums and just do it really well while you're allowing Josh, what's his fucking Josh Holm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that him to really then still give his sound and be the front man to it. It takes a humility, it takes humbleness, sure.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention Dream Widow, if we bring up Dave Grohl on the metal podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Because that's, according to that, was just the Foo Fighters.
That was just him. I found out later after we recorded that. When we recorded that episode with our other podcast, we were under the assumption that this was the Foo Fighters. This is just Dave Grohl playing every instrument and doing the vocals.
That's amazing.
I learned this later and I was like, holy shit, this is just Dave Grohl. Like, for the movie Studio 666 that the Foo Fighters made before the tragic passing of Taylor.
Yeah.
They had to have a whole new album with it, you know, like to kind of explain the lore of the movie and kind of put more real kind of tones into it. And Dave came up with the Dream Widow album, self-titled, and really, 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 really good thrash blast beat metal. And I heard you talking about Dave Grohl and I was like, I can't not bring that up.
Oh yeah, I gotta have to. I didn't forget about it, but I'm like, oh yeah, no,
so
shit,
good. Yeah, they have like a 10-minute jam that is meant to be the song in the movie that they're obsessing over, or Dave's obsessing over, and it's just such a well-written, just a new, almost new metal. It's a new type of metal to me. Not new metal, but
I would say, because I mean, I have a lot of favorite bands in a lot of different genres, but I guess I'll toss this to you as a question, because I already know your favorite one and everyone will as they listen to this for a while. But like,
are you gonna ask me what my favorite metal band is? Don't do that.
I would say three.
God damn it.
What's like the three that like have formed your opinion on what music is, like the most? And I don't even know, it doesn't have to be metal.
Heavy on the first episode of Metal.
It doesn't
Massacre,
even have
guys.
To be metal necessarily, because I'll tell okay. you.
Well, there's got to be some way to define it as metal.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You can't just be like fucking Breaking Benjamin. Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
He's my favorite metal artist.
No.
Okay. Probably number one is Death Clock.
Yeah.
I think not even just for the cartoon and the movies, but like the metal music itself and how it has progressed and how it is like, hey, we can show you a progression without selling out in a manner of speaking, but also it's going to be one of those things that you may not necessarily understand at first, but over time it matures very well.
Yeah.
Death Clock has matured very well musically.
Because I think this is a great expose into like maybe some of our tastes directly. Because I know in the last episode we brought up Lamb of God for you as well at that time. But like, maybe that's just was a period of time. I would say like
for
three
sure.
most influential on your how you still feel today.
Yeah.
Because I know Death Clock's a big one for you. Would you say Lamb of God's still in that maybe?
As like as one of the top as three? A metal band? Yeah. I don't know. Here's the thing. Sometimes, okay, for sure. I'd say Death Clock, Lamb of God, and this is hard. You put me on the spot.
I know.
Right,
so when you get to like the third one, you're like, there could be 70. But
I'm just gonna go with what we've been talking about because it's probably what's on my brain currently. Like I'm the type of person where this top three will change in 6 months.
Sure.
But Death Clock will stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So right now it's Gojira, Lamb of God, and Death Clock.
Oh, that's awesome. Gojira's
and
a great
specifically
for that.
The Gojira album from Mars Cyrus, front to back, amazing album.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's perfect. And honestly, I have this weird conspiracy theory that album influenced Brendan Small to make Death Clock's lore whale themed.
Ah, yeah.
Because it came out around the time of the first season,
like,
I think.
What was it called? Something the Whale?
It was from Mars to Cyrus, but they had a song called something about whales.
Yeah,
and it had like whale sounds in it. Multiple songs had whale sounds in them, and I think that might have inspired him to make that part of the lore. Like, I don't know if it's official, but
yeah,
that's my little headcanon there. But yeah, right now those are probably the three metal bands that I'm listening to the most.
In my brain, again, since I'm saying it, and granted one's not as metal, but it definitely is. My number one is and will be System of a Down. Like that was the first band that I really listened to when I was a kid. Like I said, I was always into hip hop. I was always into some skate punk hardcore when I started skating really a lot more like in middle school and high school. But System of a Down was like, you can give me any one of their songs off of the first first for all the way.
They're from more their, new metal.
Yeah.
But yeah, from their, they are some sort of metal, though. You could put them in that genre. There's plenty of people that put them in the conversation.
Yeah, because they're a new metal titan, and I do think that, like, you could hand me almost any one of their songs at the first albums, and I can sing it for you front to fucking back.
And little known fact, here in the studio we're recording in, we have a pair of glasses worn by Serge Tankian and also his autograph.
Yes, which is honestly pretty fucking cool. Our one of our guys in the other podcast, Nate, went to go see him in Arizona when he was down there, living down there for a little while, and actually won a contest with Red 22, which is Chavo, the bass player. He started a weed brand down there is exactly what he started. And actually, Chavo's got a new band now, too, that's called, like, Stars Under Very... It's something that, like, supposed to spell, like, Chavo or something like that. It's like a... But he's starting a new band with the guy, Taylor, from Left to Suffer, who's nice. Really big right now. So they're making an album, but not getting too far off track.
I will attach this to what you just said. We do have an interview that is confirmed. We will not leak who it is coming up from a band, from a former member of a band that broke up and started and joined a new band. We're really excited about it. I just got confirmation the other day.
Nice.
So nice. Stay tuned. We've got some pretty heavy hitting interviews coming up on this first season of Metal Massacre.
We're ready to shine the light on them.
It's going to be pretty fucking brutal.
But I would say, and then kind of like number one is System of a Down, but then in no particular order for the other two or three, because they could rotate or change, but it's pretty solid to say. It's not as metal, but Queens of the Stone Age have been a huge, like, influence to me watching how they conduct business, how they play shows, how they're not afraid to bend genres or times or areas or make something that's just completely off the fucking wall and then be willing to stand by it and make it good, even though it's obviously not for everybody. But third, Motorhead,
man. Okay, like, I was gonna get worried if you didn't include him.
Yeah, like Motorhead is also
Lemmy's
another
your
one of
those dude.
Games. Yeah,
man.
There's like, I can, in his voice or not, I can again probably sing you, like, first of all of their first two albums, and of course Ace of Spades. But like, they had like 10, 12 studio albums. So
one of the biggest tragedies in the Nebraska metal scene, I won't name it, but there's a venue that stopped being the type of venue that would hold rock shows and metal shows. And they had Motorhead come through there one day, and Lemmy signed their green room. And you showed it to me before we were even in this band together. Mm-hmm. And they just ripped it down and threw it in the dumpster.
Yeah. I was like, dude, honestly,
or painted over it. I don't know.
I felt, you feel senses of accomplishments when you're playing on your own in lots of ways. But the first time I played that venue, out in Lincoln, and we went into the green room, my dad was like, hey, did you see this?
Yeah. It's
and
crazy.
It was just like, I can't remember exactly what it said. I was like, to all of you here in this room, rock their fucking faces. And it was like, and it assigned Lemmy.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Holy shit.
I'm doing something.
Yeah, like that was the first kind of moment where you realize that this is like real.
I'm doing something. I'm actually like I'm sharing a stage that this guy's played on.
For sure.
Like at a time where he was we know him as.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking cool. Like that was, and I have a big old like memento mori, kind of fucking like giant memorabilia area in my corner of my wall. It's just a bunch of Lemmy shit.
Yeah.
So like,
he's your dude.
He's a big influence on like my style of singing and playing now, how much distortion I like to put on my bass and things like that. It's I'm just ripping them off.
I would say Black Sabbath is a big inspiration for me, in the ideas of what I write about and how I write and how I want to perform.
Ethereal, creepy. There's, like you were saying, you make a presentation of it all.
It's something bigger than just someone singing or screaming. Like, I want to make something bigger. So I take that kind of inspiration from certain people when we play live.
But, yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. Well, I feel like, again, that was a good conversation. They're trying to kind of get through some stuff as opposed to just talking about ourselves. But I do have one album, since we do, like I said, we're gonna get into interviews later in the season. We got plenty of big content. We'll always try and couch these interviews with at least like one or two, either whether it's a news story like we had or an album to review. But since we don't have an interview for this very first episode, I just wanted to come out here and introduce ourselves. I have an album for us.
Nice.
Let me pull it up to make sure I give it the proper credentials here, because I just had it and then my Spotify decided to say, hey, man, figure it out. No, here we go. So I do want to give these guys a shout out because I thought it'd be cool to start with something that probably most of you haven't heard of. I almost guarantee most all of you haven't at this point because they're newer and they're doing a very similar, I thought it was heartfelt because they're doing a very similar thing to what Molten's doing right now. Looking like they're starting to blow up, starting to get some monthly listeners behind their belt, having songs hit that like 20 to 30,000 plays and actually get out of there. It's a band called Tragic Forms and they are from North Texas. They've been around for about 5 years. So like, again, that's why I thought it was cool too, because they haven't done like any articles, but like looking at just their Spotify, they started right before COVID and they had some momentum and then got shut down after that because of COVID.
Yeah.
And then had to kind of rebrand and rebuild like all the rest of us had to, because we were, I mean, at the time that Molten was stopped by COVID was we played with Wednesday 13 at said venue that we were just talking about. But that was, and so it was the 69 Eyes was also on that show, but which honestly was really cool. Growing up as a Bam Margera fan, getting to put the 69 Eyes was like, they were all really, barely spoke any English, had like really thick accents, but like really nice dudes. Honestly, really down to earth, really fun.
That's cool.
Welcoming, super nice guys. But and yeah, speaking of super groups, like we were talking earlier about fucking the Murder Dolls, like I had Joey Jordison and all that stuff and some of the guys from so on and so forth, because we already went over that. But point is, these guys in this band called Tragic Forms put out an album called Arms Around the Armistice, and they've spent the past like 3 years now being able to get back on the road, and I've actually started to see some success. I found them randomly on Spotify, just looking up local metal radio playlists and that kind of stuff. They have, it says they have 3 full-length albums as well as hours of related content, music video streams, live performances, and podcasts they've been on.
Nice.
We should reach out.
Hell yeah.
And they recorded their fourth record, Arms Around the Armistice, in summer of 2023. This stuck out to me because exactly kind of what I was saying earlier, not afraid to mesh a bunch of fucking styles, like not afraid to play with obviously what inspires them.
Yeah.
The only credits to this is guitar and vocals is a guy named Garrett Brooks and drums is Taylor Ball. So everything else obviously has been tracked. Then maybe they hire some live folks to go on the road with them when they do go play shows.
Or maybe it's just them. You never know.
You could just track the bass. Yeah. I know my job is.
It could be like that one. What's that one band that has a bassist and a drummer, but the bass has an effect on it where it's guitar and bass?
Death from Above 1979. That was a big one.
Like, there could be something similar to that. You never know.
And I mean, you know, like, again, you can just track some of the stuff. We play with these guys. God, it's not Trimera? No. There's a band that came through. They're from LA and they're really cool dudes. I feel so bad that I don't know, but we played with them. And yeah, there's just two guys, two Latino dudes that were from like really far south LA, like closer to actually farther into San Diego, probably.
Yeah.
Like that exact same thing. Just had two dudes that had a crazy amount of distortion on their bass and were really fucking good. I mean, like, you can get away with it. But what really caught me is their biggest song here is called The Great Imperator.
Mm-hmm.
So from the top of this album all the way to the bottom, which granted, The Great Imperator is actually from their older album, but they remastered it and redid it and changed it and put it on their new album, which I thought was kind of cool.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah,
they released a song 2 times but changed it for the newest album.
I'm a fan of that. I like when you can improve upon something, make it different.
They this album starts off with a song called Indicatrix. Indicatrix. Mm-hmm. But like immediately when I started listening to this song, it starts off very, it has thrash elements, but then it gets really Road Dog really fast, closer to like a Motorhead kind of thing, like an old school thrash stuff. But then the next song, blast beats, death metal. The next song, a little bit of hair metal, where he's like getting way up there, like hitting like power metal vocals, almost close to like Queensryche and shit. I was like,
kind of like that one band we played with, Hellfire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those dudes.
It's like power speed metal almost.
Ruled. Yeah. First of all, yeah, shout out to Hellfire. Those guys were fun.
Yeah.
Lots of fun. But this band grabbed me. And honestly, I mean, I would just say, hey, go give it a listen, because I wouldn't bring you anything that I wouldn't listen to myself. But again, it's called Tragic Forms is the name of this band. I really don't want to go too long on this because it isn't it's not Slayer.
You know, it's pretty straightforward.
It is a smaller local band in North Texas, but you know, this is exactly what hopefully bands like that are trying to do is, hey, let's just put our shit out there. And then maybe someone will, I caught wind of it.
Yeah.
When I caught wind of it specifically because of how unique I felt that it was.
That's cool.
The way that the guy blends his vocals in and out, where there's certain songs where it's like black metal, like the whole time, where the way he can blend that in and then also hit the range of, like I said, like almost like a power metal singer trying to hit highs like fucking Sebastian Bach. Like, I was blown away. I was impressed. I mean, is this a 10 out of 10 album? I don't know, because I'm honestly not here to rank things on a system. I'm not here to try and give numbered. I just want to bring up things that.
Yeah, we're just here to recommend. I'm not here to review, like, in the way of, like,
is this, this get is a five 7 star? Out of 10.
Like, no, I don't need to do that.
Not here to shit on anybody or pump them up too much in that regard either. But I was just blown away by. It's one of those times you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, there's a million really good artists out here. And they're just going to take that, whatever it is, the big break that they're going to need. And I don't know if we're going to be it for them, but I wanted to bring these guys up. So, again, shout out to Tragic Forms. This is a 10-song album. Again, Arms Around the Armistice. It's only 47 minutes.
Nice. 10
songs.
Solid. About
four minutes a song. You're going to get plenty out of them. And what I really like about it is that it's so balanced that, because you know, you can listen to a Metallica song that's like 7 minutes long. You can listen to a Bongzilla song and that's fucking like 18 minutes. But you can also listen to hardcore punk and that's 90 seconds. Not even. So like these guys do a great blend of every time the song's about to end, you've had enough, you're full, I've ate enough of it. But then something else comes in and it changes. And it's like every single one of those songs feels like its own individual meal. Like a 10 course meal at a French restaurant. And I'm having a little taste of everything as I go along. And by the end, I'm full. Mm. Like that's exactly what I got out of this album. And every time that I was done with the song, I was done with it. Like, okay, what's next? And if it all just sounded the same, I might not be even bringing them up, to be honest, because it does hit so many of the niche areas that are very common, though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're niche and they're smaller, but they're very common, and you can see those comparisons. If it was just one album of the same fucking thing, which plenty of people do really well, like every Motorhead album almost says the same.
Right.
Like, come on, man. Like, I'm not
to expect. Yeah.
And having and knowing what to expect is super nice. Like I said, if I was listening to Whitechapel, then all of a sudden, Phil Bell's been singing to me and it's like nice and light. I don't want to listen to that. So what I'm fucking listening to this for. But this is all just different. I thought this was the perfect album for our first show here because it A is local and smaller, so I want to turn people on to something I thought was cool.
Mm.
But B, it's a smorgasbord. Like you're going to get such a wide facet.
What's the song that stands out to you the most on that on the newest album?
I mean, it'd be easy to say, like I said, the Great Imperator because it's the most popular one.
I don't want the easy answer. I want to know what the most standout song.
Honestly,
is.
I think it's probably their best song on this album too.
Okay.
But for me, it's called Prayers of Indifference. It's maybe not my favorite song on the album, but again, because it's the second song in this, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, fuck it, I'll start from the top.
It threw you for a loop.
If you're going to make, because a lot of bands nowadays will make EPs, or release everything as singles, like the pop or the rap style away, where everything's a single, and it's what Molden's doing. We're releasing four singles, and we're going to drop the fifth song on the album, and actually then like one more track. I might have six. We haven't figured it out yet, but EPs are a much more manageable snack, and that's because of the TikTok culture that we live in nowadays. This is the way that you should be doing things, should in air quotes, but this is like a full album. And so I was like, if someone's going to take the time to make like a full, like 10, 12 song album, a lot of the times they're doing that on purpose. So listen from the top and go through this, read the story, right?
Yeah.
Going from the first song to the second song, Prayers of Indifference, it slaps you because of, okay, I grew to expect something. This is way different. And then right after the song, Decay Inside, way different.
Yeah.
But I do think that, by name, there's a song on there, Scrape, that really was really, really good.
Mm.
Scrape was probably one of my favorite songs off that list just for what it does, because again, it hits my ears the right way. But I don't think there's a miss on this. And even some stuff where I'm like, you might be pushing yourself a little bit on that. They've mastered it and blended
off.
It so well that like the vocals aren't too sheer, or there's not just a straight guy in guitar. Like they whoever produced this did a fantastic job of being able to find the blend of when things need to pop and when they don't.
Yeah.
And how to make all of it at this wall of sound, but highlighting certain areas. And I think that's what every band, including ours, strives to do. So yeah, I just wanted to give, like I said, at the very top of our first episode, a quick shout out to a band that probably a lot of folks haven't heard of, but I believe in. If these guys keep going, I know nothing about them, haven't talked to them besides what I've done here on Spotify, but in their radio, to give you like a, I'm trying to look at their radio to see if there's any other bands that are actually big in there, because honestly a lot of the stuff that's in their like radio are other bands I haven't heard of. And I think that's really cool. I think that that shows that they have something that is inherently unique in a space that can easily get overgrown by blasé, the same fucking thing over and over. They found a way to make something that we all know tried and true, exactly that, but their own. So I just wanted to give a shout out to somewhere local. And of course, we'll review some bigger albums. Obviously, if like, you know, Gojira puts out a new album, we're going to talk about
it. Yeah, for sure.
But like, I wanted to start this episode by giving you guys a taste of what I'm doing and what I'm looking for. And we'll have more albums reviews. I think the next one Lucian's got for us in the next show. So
yeah.
But yeah, I just thought that was really fucking cool.
And yeah. So Tragic shout out to Forms. Them. Yeah. Check them out. You get the Metal Massacre stamp of approval, I guess.
Yeah. We'll start. Whoops. We'll start doing that. I don't know.
But that's awesome, dude. Thank you for doing the research on this first episode.
Yeah, man.
And thank you guys for tuning in to Metal Massacre. As always, I've been the weirdo with the beardo, Lucian. With me, Dustin Peters, the man that doesn't need a bass pick.
Oh, man, we don't do that. Yeah, no.
For a little sneak peek of what's coming next, just stay tuned.
Coming up next, we also have Lucian bringing up another metal album for us.
And Dusty and I talk to a local legend from the Omaha metal community.
Last but not least, of course, we're going to get more into it, like we talked about, some of Lucian's stories on the road and what it's like to be behind the scenes.
All that and more on Metal Massacre.